The views expressed in this episode of Squared Circle Gazette Radio aren't necessarily the true opinions of the individuals in the prosecution or the defence, but for the sake of debate, it's time to go to court. Hello everyone and welcome to the 54th Squared Circle Gazette Radio. I am Liam O'Rourke alongside Kieran O'Rourke.
Evening all.
G. John Chase.
Heinous.
Luke Edwards.
Why, hello there!
And Carl Jones.
Booyakasha!
And we are back today for the fifth of the Squared Circle Gazette trials. This is going to be one that's going to be a lot of fun. If you haven't heard our previous trial shows before, you can, of course, go back and listen to them in the archives at squaredcirclegazette.com. We've previously had Triple H, Paul Heyman, Kevin Nash, and Eric Bischoff on trial. And today it is the turn of the immortal Hulk Hogan. We're going to throw it now to the Honourable Old Man Jones to explain the rules and the charge.
Yes, this is Judge Jones overseeing the proceedings. No relation to Jeff of ECW fame. We are here today for the trial of one Hulk Hogan, a.k.a. Terry Bollea. The charge being that Hulk Hogan has caused irreparable harm to the wrestling industry over the course of his career. Now, the prosecution for this evening will be Liam O'Rourke and G. John Chase.
Yeah, boy. Yeah.
And the defence will be Kieran O'Rourke and Luke Edwards, the man of gavel fame. I see no reason to extend the formalities any longer. I'm going to throw it straight to the prosecution, and I believe the opening remarks will be by G. John Chase.
Thank you, Your Honour. We are all familiar with the classic images of Hulk Hogan, winning his first ever world title, body-slamming Andre, facing Ultimate Warrior, the creation of the NWO, and that face-to-face moment with The Rock. Those moments were preconceived to create an ideal image of Hulkamania. The reality, unfortunately, is a little different. What they failed to show is the real face of Hulk Hogan, the selfish face of Hulkamania, the man who only does what is best for himself, no matter who or what it affects. Myself and my colleague, Liam, will not be pulling any wool over your eyes or creating a false image to fool you. All we are going to do is remind you of the truth. The truth that all of us have already known. We will remind you of all of Hogan's decisions that he was given the power to make that benefited himself at the detriment of the company that he was working for at the time. We will establish a precedent of behaviour that left three companies worse off than when he arrived. One of these companies went out of business, the other one went almost close to running out of business, and the third was left so damaged by Hulk Hogan that it might as well be out of business. We will take you through the early 90s via the steroid scandal, into his destructive run in WCW in the late 90s, and finishing off with his disastrous tenure in TNA. Hulk Hogan only cares about the brand that is Hulkamania, and it has been allowed to run wild for far too long. Every time he joined a new company, he would use them to boost his ego, his image, his popularity, and his bank account. And when he eventually fucked all this up, he would always just jump ship and leave them to deal with the damage. Hulk Hogan is a parasite, a virus, a cancer that jumps from host to host, using up all their resources before moving on to another victim. But Hulkamania can be stopped, and that is what can happen today, Your Honor. You can be the man to end Hulkamania. Thank you, Your Honour.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chase. In particular for the F-bomb in what was an otherwise very articulate opening statement. With that being said, I'm now going to throw it over to the defence, and the first rebuttal, I believe, will come from Mr. Kieran O'Rourke.
Thank you, Your Honour, and may I say it is wonderful to have a judge who doesn't need to wear a wig to show off their grey hair. Ladies and gentlemen, Hulk Hogan is a piece of shit. He is quite possibly the worst human being on the planet today, if Hitler is not still alive. He's a racist. He is a cheat, but he's not on trial for being a racist, foul-mouthed, orange-skinned piece of shit. He's on trial for causing irreparable damage to the wrestling industry. And over the course of this trial, I think you will find that Luke and myself will clearly identify how this charge is not correct. We're going to deal in facts and not rumours. We're not going to try and hype up Hulk Hogan's successes and say they somehow counteract any perceived negativities. We want you to bear in mind the charge, irreparable damage. And we must bear in mind the macro effects affecting the business and the business environments at their time and the isolated instances. Thank you very much, you beautiful judge.
Thank you very much, Mr. O'Rourke. And as this is a podcast and people do not have the visual image of myself as a judge, think Judge Judy, only more masculine. I believe we're going to go to Mr. Liam O'Rourke for his first argument for the prosecution.
Thank you, Your Honour. Over the course of this trial, we have three separate case studies that we're looking to identify here to label Hulk Hogan as committing irreparable damage to the wrestling business. The first one we're going to start with here is, of course, Hulk Hogan's role in the downfall of the WWF in 1991 and 1992. Just for a little bit of backstory for those of you who aren't necessarily familiar with this, and I want you, Your Honour, to remember that over the course of this case study, we're laying a foundation, we're giving you an idea of the character of Hulk Hogan. The Zahorian trial in 1991... Dr. George Zahorian of Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, was forced to go on trial for being a glorified drug doctor. There's no other way to put it. It was big in the news because Hulk Hogan's name was found on FedEx receipts from George Zahorian to himself, as were people like Roddy Piper, Vince McMahon, so on and so forth. Steroids were big in the news at the time, situations such as Brian Bosworth previously, getting a lot of media attention, and of course Hulk Hogan, being a character marketed to children, raises the ire of the media when he's discovered with steroid receipts or steroid packages being sent to his home. However, he gets out of having to testify. Good old Jerry McDivitt makes his first appearance in the WWE and gets Hogan out of having to testify and say under oath that he has in fact been using steroids. But the buzz is there. The name Hulk Hogan is being linked with steroids in the media. There was a lot of pressure from writers like Phil Mushnick in newspapers and other writers to bring a spotlight to Hulk Hogan and steroids and the impending scandal that, hey, this man marketed who's telling our children to say they're present, eat their vitamins and believe in themselves is actually on an illegal drug. Heaven forbid. Vincent Mann sees this for what it is. He knows this is a potential landmine that the company could be walking into, what with a sordid past. Vincent Mann books Hulk Hogan to go on the Arsenio Hall show to clear his name, pretty much go out there, and Vincent Mann told Hulk Hogan to tell the truth. Basically, just go out there, say that you're on steroids, but the WWF is starting a steroid testing policy, and that it's not going to be something that is a part of the company going forward. Because at various points, steroid use was legal in America in certain states. It wasn't always legal in all states. But there was an element that Hulk Hogan could have used to tell the truth and do some damage control for what was a very scary situation impending. Instead, Hulk Hogan didn't go on the Arsenio Hall show and tell the truth like Vince McMahon, his employer, requested he do. He instead decided to put the arse in Arsenio Hall and put on a performance that Dave Meltzer called nothing short of fraudulent. It was a glorified snake oil pitch as he tried to subvert the truth completely and say that he had never used steroids in his life, with the exception of three times for injury repair in 1983, which in itself is a lie. The word that Vince McMahon used to describe Hulk Hogan's appearance on Arsenio Hall was devastated. Not because Hulk Hogan told a lie necessarily, but because he saw the media tornado that was about to hit the WWE as a result. Even the show, even the Arsenio Hall show themselves, were furious that Hulk Hogan lied on the air and put on a performance that was much different to what Vince McMahon had promised the Arsenio Hall show that Hogan was going to do. What this did, the Arsenio Hall, the reason why it's such a landmark pivot point in the history of professional wrestling is because it was the start of a domino effect. An absolute litany of bad press hit the company. Wrestlers out of the woodwork, such as Bruno Sammartino, Billy Graham, Dave Schultz, came out and said Hulk Hogan is lying through his teeth, he's been using steroids his entire life, he was a dealer of steroids at various points, he had extreme amounts of cocaine use, a serious cocaine habit, and of course, like we said before, the media was ired. They were ired because somebody who was held in high regard was bold-faced lying to them and everybody knew it. If there's one thing the media loves more than a hero, it's watching a hero fall, and that certainly fit the case here. Immediately, house show attendance for Hulk Hogan's events begins to fall. The Hulk Hogan Vitamin Company goes out of business shortly after the Arsenio Hall scandal, because of course a Hulk Hogan vitamin company selling vitamins to kids was just a nightmare written all over it. There were jokes in the media about whether or not the vitamins are orals or injectables, for crying out loud. The result that this one appearance had, the domino effect, was absolutely severe, because all it did was ire the media. People like Phil Mushnick, we've already mentioned, Entertainment Tonight, Inside Edition, 2020, all did pieces on the amount of steroids and drugs in the WWF. Now, what this did on its own, of course, bad media, bad press, is what it is. But again, all this did, it allowed everybody who had a problem, everything that had gone wrong in the WWF, that wouldn't have been given the light of day previously, because it wasn't a big deal if, for example, Terry Garvin propositioned Tom Cole. That doesn't matter to the media. But when the WWF is under fire and they're under criticism anyway for being a company that is projecting one thing to the public and is actually something else underneath. All of these things came out of the woodwork. All the sex scandals came out of the woodwork. The rape charge on Vince from Rita Chatterton. All of this scandal came about, and it was, like you said, it was the snowball going downhill. It was one thing after another. Hulk Hogan fucks off for 2 months after SummerSlam to try and let the heat die down, but of course it doesn't. The steroid talk, the cocaine talk, the sex scandals, they all continue. It goes all the way through to 1992, and of course, what does Hulk Hogan do? Hulk Hogan did what he always does, and that's decide to go to the Winchester, have himself a cold pint, wait for the whole thing to blow over, because that's what Hulk Hogan does when the pressure's on. The newspaper coverage, even in the Daily Mirror over here in the UK, had the front page story, Hulk quits in cocaine shame. The WWF's name was dragged through the mud. Because of all this pressure, testing begins. The bad press in and of itself was damaging enough to the WWF. But the fact that steroid testing began, obviously Hogan's gone because of everything that Hogan said. Warrior has to go, Bulldog has to go, the LOD goes, guys like Kerry Von Erich, Jimmy Snuka, all these guys who had been a part of the WWF in key roles, they were all of a sudden gone. The company was eviscerated of its star power. The stars vanish, the numbers tank. By the end of the year, house shows have fallen 40%, and the television ratings have fallen at a quicker rate than any other television show in the history of wrestling, with the exception of World Championship Wrestling. More on that later. Of course, we've all seen the Donahue show around this table, the very famous Donahue show, with Vince McMahon pretty much getting hammered from all sides, from people from ranging from Bruno Sammartino to Murray Hodgson, to John Arezzi, Dave Meltzer on the show as well. The reason I mention this in particular is because of one line that Vince McMahon, Dave Meltzer, they were sat next to each other, a conversation between the two of them after an hour of Vince McMahon getting railroaded by all these people for all the problems, drugs and sex in the WWF. Dave Meltzer at the end of the show turned to Vince McMahon and said simply, "If Hulk Hogan hadn't lied on Arsenio Hall, none of this would have ever happened." The point is this, the damage that Hulk Hogan did, the knock-on effect, the snowball that Hulk Hogan started with the Arsenio Hall show, is huge. The WWF is extremely lucky to have recovered, and it took them 5 years to do so. They survived based on money they made in the good years, and had to take out loans to keep going at different points. Bear in mind, this is not the irreparable damage we're speaking of in and of itself. This is all being used as a base of information, Your Honor, to illustrate that Hulk Hogan acts not only to protect himself, has a track record as a star of his magnitude of hurting the wrestling business massively in the process of fulfilling what he thinks is self-protection. And it's a domino effect. This is just a perfect illustration of the kind of person Hulk Hogan is. If it wasn't for extreme luck and extenuating circumstances in 1997, the WWF may well be out of business today. Now again, this, as we said, is not the irreparable damage, but keep it in mind as we go forward. Hulk Hogan has the ability to damage the business massively because he is a star at a level that very few in the history of the business are.
Thank you very much for that, Mr. O'Rourke. For the lack of any confusion here, I'm now going to turn over to the other Mr. O'Rourke.
Thank you, Carl.
Your Honour.
That's very nice of you, thank you. I'm a little confused what the point of that whole diatribe was about when the prosecution themselves beautifully wrapped it up with admitting that the case in point didn't cause irreparable damage because the business bounced back from it. In the most blatant of terms, if this drops down 91-92, he does his self-preservation, does a runner, and he returns later, obviously he does the WrestleMania 9 thing, but more permanently the WCW run, where given new opponents, fresh opponents, they do business straight away. That doesn't sound like irreparable damage to me.
We have spoken on this podcast, not in these hallowed halls of the courtroom, I grant you, but on this podcast many times about how difficult it is to change the WWE's direction. I think it's fair to say. Glacial is a phrase we have used on many occasions. It takes a seismic shift to change things up. I think we can all agree on that. This event was a seismic shift, and there are arguments to be made that a lot of the things that we associate with those, some of the better times of the 90s, came about via this. Now, certainly in and of itself, not a good event. People like, I think Sean would have got a good shot down the line, even with Hogan around. Would Brett? I don't know. There's a lot of people who... Because I think it's fair to say that Hogan moving on is a direct result of this. Can we all agree on that? Moving off to WCW is a direct result of this. Would the...
I would agree with that.
I would agree. Okay, good. I think we can... I'm glad this is the friendliest courtroom we've ever had around here. This is lovely.
Just wait for the next section.
Yes, I know. And so, yes, I mean, we have the opportunity for people in the WWF to move up. People to... because of the steroid scandal, which is a lot of it is centered around Hulk Hogan. For people of less usual Vince McMahon body types to take a more prominent role. It's an unfortunate way that it would come around, but it did come about because of this. Moving on further to that, if we're saying, yes, Hulk Hogan left mainly due to this scandal, that starts a lot of other positives which we've talked about as well. These don't seem to be irreparable damages. They seem to be short-term pains that led to wrestling as we know it today, both the good and the bad. But a lot of those good times in the late 90s seem to have been jump-started due to this event that you seem to be discussing as a horrific damage point. And I that's the part from your talk that I don't personally understand.
The prosecution alleges that the litany of other scandals that broke after this were somehow directly related to Hogan lying on Arsenio Hall. What was Hogan supposed to do? He was supposed to tell the truth.
That's what he was asked to do by his employer.
Okay. What happened when Lance Armstrong went on Oprah Winfrey and told the truth? He got fucked in the A, bro.
Brother.
You are alleged... You flat out said the first 2 minutes was direct question. Have you used performance-enhancing drugs? Yes. Did you use performance-enhancing drugs throughout all your 7-tour wins? Yes. Did you use EPO? Yes. Have you used testosterone? Yes. Like, straight, honest... up front.
Wasn't the cat already out of the bag of Lance Armstrong before that interview anyway, and he was doing this as an attempt at damage control because there was no other way around it?
But what is the analogy is, this was also intended to be damage control by Vince McMahon. That is the analogy I'm drawing. The point being, I mean, the Lance Armstrong thing has been mooted in within the inner circles since his first tour win, much like steroids and wrestling. You're alleging that these problems became, the whole focus of this case study is that Hogan's lie, surely the whole point is, if he had told the truth, this wouldn't have happened. I can't see how that is remotely true. If he'd come out and said the whole truth coming from his mouth, just like the Armstrong thing, those words coming out of the guy's mouth himself is a landslide impact all of itself. And you're telling me that all these knock-on effects wouldn't have happened if Hogan had told the truth? I don't see how Hogan's actions in this instance, even though you admit yourselves that there wasn't irreparable damage caused,
nope.
How his actions, given in the situation, what actions he could have taken other than not going on the show, having this information come out in court. The same thing happens in this situation with the environment stacked as it was, with all the scandals bubbling under. It was going to pop, and any response, it was going to pop the scandals. With the nature of the business, I don't see how any action would have changed the consequences thereafter.
While I take your point on board, I have to say that that entire approach is speculative, however, because this is not something that... It's very easy for us to say, in hindsight, 24 years ago, that the results of the Lance Armstrong situation would be the same as Hulk Hogan, but we don't know that because we didn't watch it live at the time, it being in America and seeing the American reaction. All we can go by is what people said. People have said that if Hulk Hogan had told the truth, it would have done significantly better than him bold-faced lying.
Not necessarily. That's speculative as well. It is
speculative, but what is not speculative is the course of events that did actually happen, which is he did lie. He did piss off the media. All these problems that probably wouldn't have come to the surface otherwise came to the surface because the media was pissed off that Hulk Hogan bold-faced lied. If the sex scandals that just happened by themselves, they could have been brushed off as something that happened in a corporation, not symbolic of the company as a whole. It started the darkest period in the history of the WWF, and like we said, the numbers speak for themselves. House shows died, ratings died, the WWF didn't recover for 5 years. We are not claiming that this is irreparable damage. What we are saying is this is demonstrative of Hulk Hogan's personality and the impact Hulk Hogan can have and did have later in his career.
I object to that. I mean, this is sounding more and more like a character assassination rather than examining facts.
I assure you, it is simply background to illustrate that what happens later on in Hulk Hogan's career is not an isolated incident, and that there are parallels between this and what would happen later that can be drawn, and that is where the irreparable damage will come in.
I am bearing in mind this is very much a case study and a general build-up, if you like, and if I do not see the appropriate links in later case studies, that will impact on my decision.
Even though at the end WWF did not go out of business, we just got to remember how close it was for them. Something, just one thing Hogan did had that much damage. one thing almost drove a company to bankruptcy. Whilst one thing like that can do so much damage, later on in our case, when we talk about two other companies, he does even more than just one thing, and it does do even more damage than that. Whilst Lance Armstrong admitted to drug use, Hulk Hogan was a drug user and a liar as well.
Sorry to interrupt, but in the same vein, yeah. the storm around Lance Armstrong was perpetuated by the constant aggressive denials by Armstrong over the years, and also the slandering of taking people to court. So there are parallels.
That's the point.
The effect.
And yes, in the case of Lance Armstrong too, he lied first. So that's why I think if anything that works against you, because Lance Armstrong lied first, Hulk Hogan lied first, and the damage is done. But it's not necessarily because in that case the Lance Armstrong point's completely moot, Your Honor, because Lance Armstrong told the truth only after he'd lied and was caught in a lie, which is the exact same situation as Hulk Hogan.
A trial would not be a trial without some witness statements, and the SCG community have provided plenty. Tiger Rick from the UK Fan Forum: the industry is relatively healthy. If Hogan had ostracized himself in 94 or 95, it would have hit seriously hard times, but it's just too big a juggernaut these days. Paradol from the F4W board: Hogan is in the same category as Vince, short-term game for long-term destruction. They cut down their entire forest as quickly as possible to sell the lumber, but didn't practice any restraint to renew the industry, and now both metaphorically and physically, they have no more wood. I think Paradol should go into sales for Viagra with a statement like that. Teddy K from the UK Fan Forums: the defence is simple, and it all pertains to the people versus Kevin Nash, with the added benefit that wrestling would never have been where it was without Hogan. Steve Bochenik, one of our regular emailers: as much as I would love to send the Hulkster up the river, he was far more beneficial to the business. No one would be making the coin they are now without the national and then international expansion, and there was no one else that had the mainstream exposure to carry it out. Ian Drew Dice Clay from the UK Fan Forum: for me, I don't think any of those things did irreparable harm to the business, simply because it is such a minefield of scumbags, rapists, murderers, paedophiles.
Well, at least you can laugh, Your Honor.
And racists anyway. That the business
no.
That the business will only keep their secrets for so long. His appearance on Arsenio Hall and the steroid scandal no doubt did damage, but even if he told the truth and being a good boy, the dominoes were going to fall around the WWF around that period anyway. And what with the whole Ring Boy scandal and what have you, which wasn't directly connected to Hogan. And the WWF recovered and became far bigger than they had been when Steve Austin exploded in 1998. So the damage only lasted for so long.
Yeah, just a couple of very brief points there, Johan. I want to commend the defence on one thing. It's in the sense that people have said there that Hulk Hogan's positive influence over the business should outweigh these things. And I know that this is not part of the defence, but for the sake of the witnesses, I think it's fair to just jump on this point. If a Marine with years and years of service rapes somebody, he still gets charged for rape. Just because somebody did lots of great things doesn't mean they're exonerated from committing a crime, which is why Hulk Hogan's on trial for this specific charge. As for Tiger Rick's thoughts, I think he mentioned something there about how the business is in fine shape today. The ratings for Raw are the lowest they've been since 1997, and that's while WCW was on the other channel getting much higher ratings at the same time. There is one company in this in North America that's doing well, and even then, compared to what they've been in the past, it's not that good. The corporation is doing well, but the wrestling industry is nowhere near as healthy as it was in years past.
We've covered the Arsenio Hall WWF scandals in enough detail there, I feel. I believe it's time to move on to the next case study from the prosecution. And for that, I'm going to be turning to Mr. Liam O'Rourke.
Okay, Your Honour. This, to me, is the smoking gun of this entire trial. To me, this is the crux of the argument. Hulk Hogan, as mentioned, gets the big contract to go to WCW. He does extremely well, especially on pay-per-view. He makes a massive difference on pay-per-view, and the WCW actually turning business around, financially speaking. Undeniably important in the rise, much in the same way he was in the 80s in the WWF. But he also had a great deal to do with the demise of WCW, and that's what we're here to talk about. There were others involved in WCW's death. Don't get me wrong, we are not saying 100% Hulk Hogan is to blame. Unlike in previous trials where the blame can be placed elsewhere, the finger-pointing game that's been played by the defence, including this very defence in the first trial, the trial of Triple H, may I add, where they can always say there is somebody else who can make the decision above them. They are not the ultimate authority. In this case, Hulk Hogan had full creative control of his contract, Your Honor. It's something I want you to keep in mind as we progress through this case study, because this clause means there is no higher authority for Hulk Hogan or Hulk Hogan's decisions than Hulk Hogan himself. It is actually, for the first time, on him with nobody to answer to, because it's there contractually. His power and influence over the company is undeniable just looking at the difference from the first half of 94 in WCW compared to the second half of 1994 in WCW, when Hulk Hogan swans in, treats Ric Flair as his doormat on the way in, and brings along Jim Duggan to beat Steve Austin in 26 seconds, Brutus Beefcake to headline Starrcade, Honky Tonk Man returns and get a push, and much more fun and games with the Dungeon of Doom following that. Just again to illustrate the amount of power Hulk Hogan had, even as things progressed, the NWO, WCW in 1997, red hot. Road Wild 97. This, of course, being the incident where there were supposed to be three title changes on the show beforehand. Kevin Nash, who's been on trial before, complains because he doesn't want to lose the tag team titles, using the argument that there have been too many title changes recently and they're starting to devalue the belts. So he convinces the Booker Terry Taylor to change it from three planned title changes to zero planned title changes. So as the show's about to go on the air, it's zero title changes. Then Hulk Hogan shows up, and zero title changes becomes one title change. Hulk Hogan came in and said, no, I will be winning the WCW World Championship on this show. Because as Dave Meltzer put it in the Wrestling Observer newsletter recapping this, there is one ultimate authority in WCW, and when he came, he changed the plan. With that in mind, with the power that Hulk Hogan has to change the course of events in WCW, he is the ultimate power broker. Eric Bischoff can be overruled by Hulk Hogan. Kevin Nash, Kevin Sullivan, Terry Taylor, the Bookers can be overruled by Hulk Hogan. Sting at Starrcade. In the words of Dave Meltzer, Patrick didn't count fast. You can mistime a ref bump, you can blow a move, but how do you blow a fast count? The only reasonable answer to this is Hogan changed the spot in the ring, and Patrick didn't want to cross Hogan because of all the power he wields, even though the plan was different. On a previous episode of Squared Circle Gazette Radio, Kieran O'Rourke, as part of his Kieran's conspiracy theory, mentioned that he believed that it was Hulk Hogan who changed the plan in the ring, and that Nick Patrick went along with it because Hulk Hogan told him.
Absolutely, and my statement, just like Dave Meltzer's statement, was pure speculation with no evidence to back it up whatsoever.
With that said, Starrcade 97 can be deemed nothing short of an unmitigated disaster for the Sting character. They'd spent 18 months building up this one match, and when it finally comes time for Sting to look great, Hulk Hogan beats the shit out of him, and for all the audience to see, he beats him clean. Whether or not this was the plan or someone forgot a fast count, this was, as it was laid out, Hogan just couldn't put him over clean. Even if, let's just say for argument's sake, that it was a complete honest mistake from Nick Patrick, there is no excuse for the following 3 months of WCW booking, where Hulk Hogan and Randy Savage's feud took precedence over Sting. It also took precedence over Bret Hart and Ric Flair. Bret Hart had just come to WCW on an enormous contract, and in his first pay-per-view it sold out was scheduled to wrestle Ric Flair in the main event. You may recall, Carl, that match did not go on last. What's the reason why? Even though it was heavily promoted, and it was promoted as the main event, Lex Luger and Randy Savage went on last because Hulk Hogan was to do a run-in and he wanted to go on last. Just keep these little points in mind. Again, Sting devalued, defending the world championship in matches that aren't in the main event because Hogan and Savage are. They're taking up all the TV time. Hulk Hogan is still the centerpiece of the promotion. He did not put Sting over. Sting never gets over to the level that he did at Starrcade ever again. He never draws money in the same realm ever again. Damage was done to Sting. I don't see how this is even remotely deniable. Bret Hart and Ric Flair, we mentioned there at Sold Out, did a 1.1 buy rate for their match at Sold Out. It was the most highly promoted match. And what does WCW do as a result? They pull Bret Hart and Ric Flair from television. Completely. On a Wrestling Observer Live with Tom Zenk as the guest in 2000, Dave Meltzer explains this by saying it was Hogan who made that call. Moving on even further, Hulk Hogan and the Ultimate Warrior in later 98 takes up all the TV time during Goldberg's title reign. Of course, Goldberg being the guy that Hulk Hogan put over in the Georgia Dome on the provision that he'd be the one to end Goldberg's streak, regardless of whether it was best for business or not. Hulk Hogan was going to get it back in the end, which brings us, of course, to Bill Goldberg and the Fingerpoke of Doom. Everybody knows the story, I don't want to belabor the point too much, but of course, Hulk Hogan orchestrates, and it is on record, that the plan was always supposed to be Hogan beats Goldberg at Starrcade. It was changed for Kevin Nash to beat Goldberg, as long as Nash gave it immediately to Hogan, of course, which is the farce we all saw. They destroy Bill Goldberg in the Georgia Dome. Hulk Hogan is the new top heel, Goldberg's the top babyface. What comes of this, from a theological standpoint, Your Honor, is to build the NWO, and Hulk Hogan particularly, up as this mega force for Goldberg to get his heat back on Hogan and win in the end and destroy the NWO, which of course, as you know, and as most of our listeners know, never happened. Why did it not happen? Because in 1999, in February, Hulk Hogan turned babyface. It was his decision. He wanted to do it because he has the ability to say yes or no to everything. He made the decision to do this to Goldberg. He made the decision to do it to Sting. He made the decision to turn himself babyface. And Ric Flair, who is one of the most consistent ratings draws in WCW through this entire period, heel. This killed the buy rates. Super Brawl 99 did a 1.1 buy rate. Even after Goldberg loses at Starrcade, even after the Finger Poke of Doom, WCW still has the ability to make money with pay-per-view events. A 1.1 for Super Brawl. The Nitro rating at the start of February is a 4.7. By the end of April, after Hulk Hogan turns babyface, it's a 3.6, and Nitro only ever does a 4 one more time in the entire course of its existence. Hulk Hogan, of course, sees this, and what does he do? He goes to the Winchester, he gets a pint, and he waits for it all to blow over, because that's what Hulk Hogan does. The Goldberg revenge story is completely ruined because of Hulk Hogan's babyface turn, and Goldberg, much like Sting, was never the same again. He never drew big money on pay-per-view, he never made a massive difference in ratings ever again. In 1998... WCW made $250 million of revenue and $55 million of profit. In 1999, they lost $15 million. Why? Predominantly because their pay-per-view budget fell so far significantly down from where it was the previous year. And just to use illustrations here, again, Starrcade 1.1, Super Bowl 99 1.1. Immediately after this, Uncensored 0.73. Spring Stampede the next month, 0.6. It gets to the point, for Road Wild, Hulk Hogan's in the red and yellow in his babyface turn. In the main event, there's a 0.55. The buy rate has been cut in half from where it was 8 months prior, now that Hulk Hogan's the babyface and the top star in the company in the red and yellow. 1 month later, Fall Brawl 99, Hulk Hogan, the top babyface, versus Sting, does a 0.35 buy rate. It is, at this point in WCW's history, the second lowest buy rate that WCW has ever done, only ahead of Battle Bowl 93, a show which you may recall got significant consideration for the most useless pay-per-view ever on a previous podcast here at Squared Circle Gazette Radio. Hulk Hogan is the predominant factor that turned this company into a money loser. By doing so, by making WCW, which was doing so well, into a money loser, it put it in the firing line. It put it in the position for it to be killed. We've talked before about, would WCW have had the plug pulled by Jamie Kellner if it was in a position where it was doing great ratings and, more importantly, not pissing blood, losing so much money? There was no way to prove that that would ever be the case. It happened because they were in such bad financial position. And he put it in such bad financial position on pay-per-view because he made everything about himself. Fuck Sting, fuck Goldberg, it's the Hulk Hogan show. And what's worse is that he didn't have to hurt them to help himself, but he did it anyway, and by doing so he allowed the company to fail. Now there is an argument, certainly, that WCW is a disorganized mess, and that maybe there are other factors to do with other individuals that led to WCW's demise from a chaotic standpoint. However, consider WCW, as we have established on our Monday Night War timeline series, was a chaotic environment before the Monday Night War started, during the beginning of the Monday Night War, and during WCW's peak in the Monday Night War. There was chaos all around WCW, and yet it still drew $250 million of revenue. The reason WCW went out of business is because the stars, who in 1998 meant a lot, could no longer draw money in 1999. And when they couldn't draw money in 1999, you have to look at why. Because Sting was ruined by Hogan. Because Goldberg was ruined by Hogan. Because Bret Hart was taken off TV on three separate occasions at points when he should have been on television. Turning Ric Flair heel, which the audience didn't want. Turning himself babyface, which the audience clearly didn't want. And they voted with their remote controls, which you can see in the ratings. You can see it in the buy rates, which we've mentioned is one of the most catastrophic drops in the history of wrestling, if not the most catastrophic short-term drop. Again, much like 1991, Your Honor, Hulk Hogan's decisions lead to a domino effect that, yes, ultimately lead to the destruction of WCW. Because of Hulk Hogan's decisions, WCW panics because they don't know what to do. They can't reverse the trend. And of course, Hulk Hogan has to be a key feature player. They panic, things don't get better. They bring in Vince Russo to try and solve it, things don't get better, and in the end, it's Goodnight Irene. WCW is dead, and the chances of anything like WCW coming along again are so slim that they can be deemed impossible. And I don't think that anybody in this room, regardless of their position, deep down believes that the wrestling business is better off because WCW is dead. It's not. The wrestlers have no leverage. There's no competition. The last 14 years of television have been so much more significantly boring than the wrestling business was before it. This is irreparable damage. Hogan lobbied to have this unprecedented power, and for as much as the defense may want to say that it's not Hulk Hogan's fault he was given this, the fact of the matter is this: with great power comes great responsibility. He had the power to say this happens, this doesn't happen, this angle happens at Starcade that shouldn't have happened, this course of events with Bill Goldberg shouldn't happen, but he didn't. He did them all, it damaged it, we proved it in the numbers, this is irreparable harm in the long run.
Okay, a lot has been said about the Hogan creative control contract. And we're not going to debate that, it's no so well-known fact. Could the argument be made he shouldn't have been given it? Well, again, I'm not going to make that argument because he wouldn't have gone, probably, if he hadn't had that. So the problem I have with this is the equating of Hogan's creative control to the failure of the company to create any other stars that would, in theory, supplant Hogan or support the business. Indeed, this was a completely fucked-up run company with so many management structure issues, and it just seems that if the prosecution is finding it so convenient to place this blame at this point at the feet of Hogan, the prime overarching reason for Kellner cutting their losses was literally that, the losses that WCW made. Tragically, ridiculously, ass-slappingly large amount of money. I just cannot see how the prosecution can assert that Hogan's creative control input resulted in these ridiculous financial losses, when in previous court cases we have demonstrated how this company wasted money on Master P, Kiss, the yearly hog wild pay-per-views, which were just money pits. We're talking about why this company went out of business. Over everything else, it's money losses. In my mind, there is no way the prosecution has demonstrated that Hulk Hogan lost this company that money, squandered. Just quickly on the Goldberg dropping the belt, I was a little confused by this. Hogan drops the belt to Goldberg. We can admit if that was in his own self-preservation purposes to be the one to then end the streak, but this didn't happen. As we know, Kevin Nash ended the streak. Was Kevin Nash the booker at that time?
No.
He was not. But he's a cool guy, so he probably had a lot of influence himself. Even though I rendered him not guilty. But the point being, the Hogan then getting the belt by the finger poke, how was Hogan gaining personally from that?
Because he was the top heel in the company when all was said and done.
More than beating Goldberg himself. I find this a little contradictory you're seem to be overly pointing the finger as a character assassination at Hogan.
This is not MMA math where Kevin Nash beats Goldberg so he gets a certain amount of points and that puts him above Hulk Hogan. The point in both cases of Sting and Goldberg, regardless of what happened at Starcade, accident or not, Hulk Hogan was still the most featured performer afterwards. Sting was nullified. Goldberg, after he lost to Kevin Nash, 1 month later, who's the top heel in the company? Hulk Hogan. Kevin Nash is below him, feuding with Rey Mysterio. Hulk Hogan gained because in the end, Hulk Hogan ended up where Hulk Hogan was supposed to be when he lost everything to Goldberg, which is the top heel with Goldberg chasing, and Goldberg never did get to Hogan.
But we seem to be pointing at the Hogan selfish terms, and I just don't feel that this point really demonstrates a pure selfishness on Hogan's part.
Goldberg loses, Nash Hogan wins.
Surely,
the
biggest ego rub for Hogan would be to be the one to go down in history as the man who ended Goldberg's streak. I just find this a little contradictory in principle. Similarly, the point in the finger. See, Hogan is getting the blame. Hogan has creative control over his own direction. He doesn't have contractual control over people like Ric Flair's personal direction. You bring up the Flair turning heel when he was, you know, one of the biggest ratings draw, but I think it's well established that Ric Flair himself has instigated many heel turns and pushes over the years because he prefers to be a heel. Therefore, to simply point this as a bad Hogan decision, which almost insinuating that Flair wouldn't want to do it because he was hot as a face.
Objection, I never insinuated that Ric Flair didn't want to do it. All I said was that Ric Flair was turned heel because Hulk Hogan made the decision to do it. That's all.
You're not saying that Flair was opposed to it, but you are stating that it was Hogan's idea, Hogan's brainchild. Is that correct?
Not necessarily. It was his brainchild. He was the one that made the decision to go that direction because he wanted to be a babyface. Ultimately, this argument always does come down to who made the decision. And there's always somebody above everybody else to make the decision. In Hulk Hogan's case, there is not. Even if it was Ric Flair's idea, Hulk Hogan put it into practice because he wanted to be a babyface. And if he didn't want to do it, he wouldn't have, because he didn't have to do anything he didn't want to do.
The overarching point I want to make here is that
Yes, Hogan had creative control over his own direction. With Hogan's direct booking, yes, but Hogan doesn't have control over other people's directions. And I think this is then a speculative leap that the prosecution is making when, as we've established time and time again, there was a complete lack of focus and direction amongst WCW at the time.
The point at the end of the day is that WCW shutting down is the irreparable damage that you speak of.
Absolutely.
That's where we're going.
Absolutely.
I understand. Okay. Now, I've been sitting here crunching rating numbers. It's fair to say that even when wrestling was super hot in the 90s, they weren't pulling in great ad revenue and stuff for the network. It's never really worked for ad revenue, because wrestling has always had that reputation. I'm looking at the ratings from 2000. Compared to the other stuff that network was putting on at the time, the ratings weren't that bad. They really weren't that bad. I have placed the microphone on top of my iPad, which has my data on it, but never mind. At the end of the day, the man named Jamie Kellner came to power. He was going to come to power regardless of Hulk Hogan. There is arguments to be said that, well, he certainly wasn't a wrestling fan. He didn't watch the wrestling show. His quote is that he felt wrestling, and indeed he had always felt wrestling, did not fit the image of the network. Good wrestling or bad wrestling on that network was not something Jamie Kellner wanted. Okay. Now, we have seen since with TNA and various other things, is if you lose TV, you're gone. I don't give a damn if you have the best pay-per-view numbers ever. You got no TV, your pay-per-view falls to damn near zero. Okay? And WCW was losing those TV stations at that period of time. Hulk Hogan, no Hulk Hogan. Doesn't make a difference, because Jamie Kellner, Hulk Hogan was probably the only guy on the roster Jamie Kellner knew the name of. But even then, didn't know jack shit about the guy, didn't know anything about wrestling, didn't watch it, didn't know all the crazy shit that was going backstage, and did not care, just didn't want wrestling on the station. So it was going away. The best they could have hoped for was having slightly better ratings at the time, maybe getting picked up by someone else. There were a lot of other places out there. It was going away anyway. WCW was pretty much fucked at that point. I can see a definite argument for WCW going away being some serious damage to the wrestling industry. No doubt in my mind, that's absolutely fair. But one way or the other, 2000-2001, that little turning point, where a different man came to power in the network above Hulk Hogan. Fuck WCW as a company, they don't matter. They're just a little fucking wrestling company from fuck knows where. The network decided, we don't want this anymore, it's going away. And honestly, I think if they were doing double the ratings, it wouldn't have changed his mind. Because ratings didn't matter to him as much as this concept of image. Okay, I'm not going to give you the full biography on Jamie Kellner. He's an interesting fellow. Recommend everyone looks him up. Lovely guy. Sounds like he'd be great at the party.
I'd just like to cross-examine Luke just briefly. Don't worry, Luke, you won't have to disrobe.
But I already started!
Well, you can put that stuff back on, because the gavel's not hiding your shame.
I was just pleased to see you.
You did mention there a ratings comparison, and I would just like some numbers on that if you're going to make the case, please.
Yeah. WCW, throughout 2000, we're looking at, on average, just below a 3. I mean, you know, it's just below a 3. It's not amazing, but it's not the worst.
Kieran, you mentioned about wasted money outside of Hogan, and you referenced a few examples there, such as Master P and Road Wild. I wondered if you had any hard figures to support those.
About 9.5 inches, that's a hard figure for you, if you get me. For the ladies listening. Okay, right.
She's not coming.
She only got herself to blame for that one. Genius, $250,000 over 2, I think. For never to be used on TV. Scott Norton, I believe, is around 600,000. Even maybe higher. Maybe even 750. The roster, the sheer size of the roster, it was in the hundreds, being paid these ridiculous sums of money. Nothing to do with Hogan. And if the be-all and end-all of this company is the money lost, then I think, you know, these are business decisions which Hogan had no input into.
Just to counteract a couple of those things there, I just want to comment on something that Luke said about the inevitable death of WCW via the hand of Jamie Kellner, because that's something that I completely object to. The idea that no matter what happened, if WCW was doing well, Kellner was coming in and killing it, not only is that speculative, but you can counter that with similar speculative claims. Let's, for example, if WCW was not losing money in the first place, losing as much money as they were, would Jamie Cullen have been able to have the clout of people above him to pull a company that was generating that much revenue for the network? Similarly speaking, if the company was generating as much money as it was previously and was doing the ratings it was doing previously, even if Jamie Kellner pulls the television, it is not inconceivable for another network to have picked it up and taken it themselves, because they were in negotiations with Fox in 1998 and 1999 for specials on their network as well. If TNT canned it, they probably would have found another home. And that's no more speculative than the idea that Jamie Kellner's killing it no matter what, because there's at least a track record of negotiations on that front for WCW in 99.
Would Kellner have cut WCW in 2000 if they were doing the business they were doing in 93, pre-Hogan?
Possibly, yeah.
Okay. Would Fox have been in negotiations in 98 without the Hogan factor, so doing the business they were doing in 93?
Possibly not.
Okay, just things I think we should bear in mind in the grand scheme, in the macro environment, which we're inevitably talking about here.
Granted, if Hulk Hogan had never been there, WCW doesn't hit the heights it got to. I am not disagreeing with that. But we're talking about irreparable damage. And Hulk Hogan took it from, and no, I know this is great for a podcast, they took it from one spot and rose it. And then by the time it was done, it plummeted to the centre of the earth. Because they lost more money in 1999 due to the bad decisions that Hulk Hogan influenced himself, not even influenced, approved, than they ever did before.
He was at the time the chairman and CEO of the entire Turner Broadcasting System owning TBS, TNT, Cartoon Network. There really wasn't anyone above him for that kind of decision. Technically, he could alienate the board, but, I mean, that's not something that ever stopped Turner previously. So, it's just something to bear in mind. It's just a small point off limbs, just to add that.
If both sides have sort of finished their cross-examination exploits, we'll move on to more witness statements. Mad Dog from Pro Wrestling Only: I think Kevin Nash has more to do with WCW dying than Hulk Hogan did. Nash ended Goldberg's streak and beat Wrath in the build up to that.
Objection.
I'll allow it. It was largely Nash's booking in the spring of 1999 that brought WCW to a complete halt momentum wise. Hogan was out with an injury for the period where WCW really fell apart. If you look at 1999 to 2000 era, where things really took a nosedive, Hogan wasn't there. He was back for about 2 months and after an injury in 1999, and he was there for about 4 months in 2000. And to the positives of Hogan, even as late as 1999, he had a positive impact on the product. That Super Brawl match with Flair did huge pay-per-view numbers, like top five in company history.
And 8 months later, they did the second lowest in company history because of a decision that Hulk Hogan made to make himself the top babyface. Just the point there that Mad Dog touched on about Kevin Nash. During the trial of Kevin Nash, we talked about his reign as head booker. And if you recall, we told the story about how he had Hogan working with Goldberg in the summer during a meeting with himself, Bret Hart, Hulk Hogan, Eric Bischoff. Hogan claimed he wanted to work with Bret. Nash is head booker, but he still has to answer to Hogan. He wanted to do Hogan Goldberg. Hogan didn't want to do it. Nash was furious. As we mentioned before, Kevin Nash suggested an angle with Goldberg and Bret Hart with a steel plate, and Bret Hart had to clear it with Hogan first.
The prosecution has accurately mentioned Hogan stepping away. He's missing for a lot of time. For whatever reason, that's kind of irrelevant. The big scale picture is...
I disagree.
When he's not there, he seems to be getting slack for horrendous booking and direction when he's not even around. It's not even affecting him.
When did we say that?
I'm bringing up the point that, on the grand scheme of things, if he was such a negative influence, why wasn't the product better, significantly better, when he wasn't even around?
Because he killed the stars when he was there. Right. He killed the other star power, and that's proven in the buy rates.
And they are completely incapable of building stars in the time when he's not around.
The damage was done.
You can't build stars through the undercard, through the midcard.
Again, Hulk Hogan helped create a caste system by working, by being the top guy, by being the centre of the promotion, and working only with who he wanted to work with. He didn't bring people up because he didn't want to.
Okay, what about when he's not even there?
They elevated Jeff Jarrett, they tried with Booker T, they didn't exactly. Benoit to
bad,
an extent.
Bad decisions that didn't work.
Didn't work, but again, it doesn't help that these guys were languishing under Hulk Hogan's vision for so long.
Mr. Scorpio from the F4W board.
Scorpio.
I wanted to do that.
There comes Mr. Scorpio.
That's what I was going with. Beware of his generous pensions and 3 weeks paid vacation.
I guess you got our outro, right?
I digress. Mr. Scorpio from the F4W board. Hogan's part in the demise of WCW caused irreparable damage to wrestling in America. Granted, there were a number of cooks that spoiled the shit stew that WCW eventually became, but Hogan's part bringing in his has-been buddies to take away spots from younger talent leading to more cartoonish television in 1994 and 1995, his overwhelming influence over Eric Bischoff, his creative control which affected numerous wrestlers adversely. Anyone was fair game that threatened his turf. Yes, of course there were others who were culpable. Bischoff letting things spin out of control, Hall and Nash running wild, more on Russo and that tosser Jamie Kellner for pulling the plug. But Hogan was at the heart of it. In 2001 to 2015, wrestling in America has never reached the same sustained highs in the public consciousness as 85 and 89 and 1997 to 2000, and it never will again. Beast from Pro Wrestling Only. The question is, do we look at Hogan as someone who would have known when to say enough is enough, but didn't, leading to him running WCW into the ground for good? Or is Hogan himself a chaotic force of nature who wouldn't have been able to rein in his negative tendencies no matter what? Does WCW get those NWO years simply in exchange for burning up shortly thereafter? Meltzer just posted on his board about how Nash beat Goldberg specifically to lose it to Hogan. Hogan was the reason that whole entire thing happened, and Nash was given the book as a gift in turn. Please tell me we aren't going to stop pretending Hogan was not a major factor in WCW's fall. Come on, seriously.
Hear, hear.
Theo Diaz from TPWW forums. It's basically the same thing as with the NWO argument. He definitely raised WCW to heights it would not have seen without him, but at the same time his selfishness in looking after himself to the cost of everyone around him ensured that the benefits wouldn't last. But at the end of the day, it was WCW that enabled him to do it, so I can't put all the blame on him. Something Savage from Pro Wrestling Only. Whatever negative waves he caused during the dreadful 94 to 95 period were washed away almost entirely by the massive business he did for them in late 96 and 97 and the first half of 98. The NWO was a significant factor in the Attitude Era and Monday Night Wars, and I don't see them becoming true water cooler talk without Hogan's name and rep attached to that money train. Hogan wasn't a booker or promoter, he was a performer, he was talent. It's Bischoff and WCW that put him in a position to call his own shots, but being selfish and unaware of what always best for an entire company kind of goes hand in hand with being a top guy. Even Austin at his peak was paranoid and self-centred about what he was doing, regardless of how it benefited or hurt anyone else. Cases could be made for almost anyone that worked on top, especially during the periods of hot business. Hell, the stink of 94 and 95 was almost instantly visible. Business turned around for them big time with that 96 to 98 period. That's the long run. The downfall of WCW is what followed in the even longer run. Pinning all of that on Hogan's shoulders seems like a stretch, to say the very least. Always enjoy these trial shows, though. Hopefully you guys will give Hogan a fair shake. Connie Val from Pro Wrestling Only. I think it's a mistake to focus on whatever specific creative control clause Hogan had in his contract. At his level of fame and star power, he was going to rule the roost regardless of what the contract said, especially in an environment where no one knew which way was up. I doubt Austin had any creative control clause, at least at the initial stages of his boom. But I also doubt he ever had to do anything he really didn't want to do. And when he finally did, we saw how he handled it. This is the danger of having a star who outshines the company, a situation that WWE is clearly eager to avoid repeating. Of course, that has its own problems. Smelly Meatball from TPWW forums. I'd argue that in the case of WCW, either the match versus Sting or the match versus Goldberg is where his influence or creative stranglehold over the company should have ended. Hogan shouldn't have still been hogging the spotlight after the Sting match, nor by association after the Goldberg match, considering how Goldberg's title reign ended. Steve-O-Maniac from WrestlingForum.com. He deliberately sabotaged the payoff of the greatest build-up in the history of the business because of his fucking ego. That's a moment that the fans will never, ever get back. So yes, he has done irreparable damage to the business. That point is beyond debate or question. Loss from Pro Wrestling Only. Hogan was absolutely a factor, but he had a level of creative control in his contract that would stifle anyone trying to run the company without figuring him in as the top star. And 1998 was the year to start moving on from him as the number one guy, especially when Goldberg fell in their lap. But that was the year they signed Hogan to a new deal, with all the same perks. Good on Hogan for negotiating that, but I'm not sure people realise that in doing so, WCW ostensibly gave Hogan full control of the creative direction of the company as long as he worked there. The story of Hogan's career is one of a guy who had huge rises and devastating falls. In the case of raping and pillaging WCW, wrestling still hasn't really recovered from that one and likely never will be as healthy as it was then. CS from Pro Wrestling Only. I know we aren't supposed to talk about the good, but he did more good than bad. Was he even around in the very end anyway? Without the Hogan heel turn, WCW doesn't get all those curious casual fans tuning in to find out what the hell just happened, and the NWO would have been just another group squashed by Starrcade. I think it's silly to blame him for the demise of WCW when that company had a million and one other problems that brought it down. Derek R. Hubbard from the F4W board. In pro wrestling, few things are really beyond repair. With this in mind, I don't think Hogan did irreparable harm by lying on the Arsenio Hall show or by controlling WCW. On the contrary, both indiscretions changed pro wrestling and yielded some positive side effects. Without the steroid scandal, mid-sized wrestlers with superior talent such as Hart and Michaels would not have been given the ball to run with. Furthermore, the caustic environment in WCW pushed superior talent out the door. Many of these talents, Benoit, Guerrero and Jericho, found a place in the WWE main event scene.
Well, hang on a second here. That's not good for WCW, though, is it? The argument you just made there.
But it's for wrestling, not for WCW.
The industry. No, I'm just saying, if the argument is that that's a positive thing, that WCW's potential future stars left because of Hulk Hogan, that's not good for WCW. And since WCW's dead, that is the long-term negative.
Not guilty from the WrestlingForum.com. Oh, I'll be the one that decides that, thank you. Hogan wanted to be the champ, the centre of attention. Look at when the NWO got stale and people lost interest. Who magically turned face to stay relevant? Hogan. Not being able to accept he can't be the number one guy forever is how Hogan has negatively impacted every promotion. Jerry Von Kramer from Pro Wrestling Only. Blaming Hogan is like blaming a lion who bites your hand off if you put it in its mouth. If the inmates take over the asylum, you can't blame the inmates. It wasn't just Hogan fucking over WCW. Everyone did it. Savage did it. Nash, Hall, Sid, every fucker who was there. If Vince hadn't been in control, none of it would have ever happened. Vince had basically the same locker room and it didn't happen. There were politics and backbiting, sure, and issues and problems. But Vince was the boss, and if push came to shove, guys were shown the door. Straight to WCW. Bischoff and WCW management were much more to blame for everything in WCW than Hogan. Was Hogan a selfish asshole? Yes. Did Hogan think more about himself than the interest of the company? Yes. Was Hogan also the biggest star in the history of wrestling? Yes. Should he have done more jobs? Probably as a heel he should have. Should he have put over Sting clean? Definitely. But these are little things. Overall, he just behaved exactly as you would expect someone in his position to. We've covered Arsenio Hall in the WWF. We've covered WCW. Now let's move on to the final section of this court case, where I believe we are covering Total Non-Stop Action Wrestling. Everyone's coming up with their own jokes as I say that. And we will go straight over to the prosecution, and on this occasion, Mr. G. John Chase.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'm still here. It's just kind of interesting to see that Hogan never actually learns from his mistakes. So as we look into his TNA run, you know, he signs with the company in late October, I believe, of 09. Doesn't really actually debut properly for the company until January, because he had commitments mainly to himself with his own tour. During this time, Dixie Carter, when being interviewed by the Sun paper, was asked what exactly was Hulk Hogan's involvement in the company. She stated that he is involved with everything from looking at the talent to how we shoot the show. So it's already kind of stating from Dixie herself that not only is Hogan going to be an on-screen talent, but he's also going to have, obviously, a lot of say in terms of how the product's going to look. With that said, when we finally get to January 4th, where they decide that it was a good idea to kind of restart the Monday Wars right away, as opposed to slowly building up to it, I will admit that there was an initial success. Just like with WCW, as we stated before, Hogan does always have an initial success before the downward slide. But in this case, on this actual January 4th show, there's some interesting points to make. First off, the amount of people who either return to the company or debut for the company. First off, I'll just mention the NWO. Straight away, as I stated, with history repeating itself, Hogan's kind of doing the same things over again. So he brings the NWO in of Nash, Hall and Waltman, and Hogan refuses to join them and claims that now this is quote, different times, as he states, as he's standing right next to Bischoff in the ring. So things aren't quite that different then. And he proceeds to state that he will flip the company upside down and everybody will have to earn their spot. Which is interesting considering the people who get debuted on this show, namely Jeff Hardy, Ric Flair, Shannon Moore, Orlando Jordan, Val Venus, and the Nasty Boys. The majority of these guys were either friends with Hulk Hogan or even appeared on the Hulkamania tour back in November.
May I just interject Bubba the Love Sponge?
Bubba the Love Sponge as well. And of these names, only two of them really is of any relevance. And of those two, one of them is an old man who's just retired with the WWE, and the other was Jeff Hardy, who did actually have some value to him, but unfortunately, on this show, he debuted during an X Division match, and debuted amongst a whole lot of names, so he wasn't like the major news point, and I don't believe he was fully contracted at the time as well. So already, on the first show, there's already slip-ups. A lot of names get kind of pushed out of this company. These names were, to a certain degree, throughout the roster, were kind of synonymous with the company at the time. And this was a company which in 2009 was dealing with a certain degree of success. They were getting reasonable buy rates for the company at the time. But what starts happening with Hulk Hogan in charge is Hogan slowly starts to try and change the identity of the company. The names that leave this company during his tenure at the very beginning: Desmond Wolfe, Amazing Red, Young Bucks, Alex Shelley, Awesome Kong, Doug Williams, Madison Rain, Jerry Lynn, Angelina Love, and Matt Morgan. All people who were key figures at different points within the roster and all represented an identity for the company. Also, at the same time, he continues to take away the identity of the company, which made them different from the WWE. He took away the six-sided ring. There were numerous concepts that Hogan tried, that were again just things that were kind of harking back to WCW. Numerous groups like Aces and Eights, Immortal, Fortune, EV 2.0, just all of them just regurgitating the same thing of him trying to recapture the NWO. Other things like the poor Bound for Glory series that didn't make any sense, trying to revitalize the X Division, which failed, defending a TV title every week, which they quickly forgot about, the awful gut check, and open fight nights. All these things were failed concepts. Hogan straight away, like the first program that he does, is a Team Hogan versus Team Flair feud at Lockdown, in which, surprise surprise, Team Hogan go over. And Hogan's team pretty much consisted of already established stars like Jeff Hardy and RVD, whilst Ric Flair's team had the likes of Beer Money and Desmond Wolfe. And it's these young guys that they should be building the company around. He's putting over people who either didn't deserve it, like Nasty Boys and Val Venus and so on, and kind of taking away the identity of the company. And this is a problem, because as it continued on throughout his run, and I can name numerous other bad storylines that they did during this time, and the damage, you can mention Abyss and the whole Hall of Fame ring that gave him the power to be like a wrestling god and so on. All these bullshit storylines, the back and forth of Hogan, whether he was a good guy, whether he was a bad guy, now he's a good guy again, Sting's in charge now, but Sting gives control of Hogan. All this convoluted crap is all like the same as WCW, the stuff that Hogan was doing before. Stuff that's damaging the company. And this is the problem with Hulk Hogan and what he does to companies that he's involved with. He tried to recreate a WCW, and what he did not just damaged the individuality of the product, but he also damaged the faith in the fans. And I'm not talking about necessarily the fans of TNA, because even though they were damaged themselves, but also just general fans of the business as well. Because at this time, after WCW had closed, fans are clamoring to go back to the old ways of having a competitive business, to having another company. And unfortunately, there has been no other company that's gone anywhere near there, apart from one. There was only one company so far in the last 13 years that's had an opportunity, and that was TNA. Even though it was a very small opportunity, it was still an opportunity nonetheless, and the fans had faith that something could come out of this, that maybe there could be an alternative. And they wanted to see a new WCW. And you know what? That's exactly what Hogan gave them. He gave them a WCW from 1995, full of his old friends. He gave them a WCW from 99, full of dodgy, inconsistent booking and burials of new faces or baby faces. The company has been so damaged since Hogan left. And Hogan just jumped ship straight away. It was as we've already stated before, you know, he jumped to WWE, it's absolutely fine. Long as Hulkamania is alive, the company's been damaged to the point where they might as well be out of business. They're nowhere near what they were in 2009. You know, they're struggling to get TV. They can barely fill the venues that they're working. They can barely fill their own locker room. In fact, that just recently, Kurt Angle's turned around and said he's going to take some time out. Numerous names like Kevin Nash and Booker T jumped out during Hogan's run. Sting left to go to WWE. The Dudley Boys more recently. Even Samoa Joe turned around and said, fuck this, I'm going to try WWE as well.
AJ
Styles, he couldn't wait to leave, went to New Japan, hasn't looked back. Now this company's just absolutely worth nothing. And everyone's just abandoned it because of what Hulk Hogan did over the course of about four and a half years. Anytime something comes along that could improve things or maybe bring things back to when wrestling was good again, Hogan just comes along and shits in everybody's cereal. Hogan always repeats his own history. He's always destined to fail because the only thing Hogan's interested in is himself. He's not interested in the business. And for that, he will always cause damage.
Okay, just before I pass over to the defence, I'm sorry, I'm a real stickler for numbers. And you referenced buy rates, you referenced attendances and things of that nature, but you didn't provide any figures.
So the best rating TNA ever did was a 1.5 for the January 4 show with Hulk Hogan. When the Monday Night War continued, there was a March episode that did a 0.6, so that died on the vine pretty much immediately. They had to move that with their tail between their legs, and the idea of them as a true alternative is revealed to be completely false. In terms of buy rates, they were at their best during the Kurt Angle Samoa Joe feud in 2006 and 2009, ranged from 50,000 to 60,000 buys. It was devalued to eventually 8,000 buys for an average TNA pay-per-view during the Hogan run. I grant you I used the high watermarks there for Angle and Joe, but the average buy rate was hovering around 25,000.
Okay, thank you very much. And with that, I will be passing over to the defence and Mr. Luke Edwards.
Thank you, Your Grace. One thing I'd like to just say, actually, very quickly before I start, is I feel that there has been a little bit of potentially omission. I don't wish to say that you have been intentionally misled by Mr. Gigi John Chase, but he started off very quickly talking about how Hogan brought in the NWO and that kind of thing in Nash and Hall with him. He started off that. Kevin Nash had been part of TNA consistently for 5 years before Hogan turned up. From 2004, there wasn't a year that went by without him being there for several months. Scott Hall was there in 2004, also left because he had Scott Hall-related issues. It is also important to note that before Hogan had arrived, a full year before Hulk Hogan arrived, TNA was running the main event Mafia angle with Sting, Booker T, and Kurt Angle and Kevin Nash jobbing out various people and doing this, that, and the other. Pretty much everything that G attributed to Hogan in those years was happening before Hogan turned up. It's that simple. All through 2008, you've got the main event Mafia. People at home, go look at Kevin Nash's Wikipedia page for what he did during his TNA run. It's wonderfully hilarious. And it's
fucking graph.
It's amazing. it's just, honestly, it's certainly better than actually watching it on television. So, and also, it's a list of names that keep cropping up. Like I say, several years before Hogan in TNA. Names that keep popping up around the top of TNA. You've got your Booker T's, your Kurt Angle's, your things, people from elsewhere, your Steiners, you got your Jim Cornette, you got all these people positioned around the top of TNA. Hulk Hogan did not bring these people there. They were there already because that's what TNA wanted. And it wasn't doing them any good.
The point we've made, I think, and everyone listening knows it, and it goes really goes without saying, our defense should be it's fucking TNA. They couldn't run themselves before Hogan. They couldn't run themselves during Hogan, and they sure as shit can't run themselves since Hogan. Hogan is not the common denominator in TNA not being able to run a fucking company. We talk about, I mean, the only thing, indeed, maybe one thing that Hogan did was give us as fans and them as the company as the full sense that actually maybe they can challenge that first rating. I mean, it was a terrible decision to go on Mondays. Can we attribute that direct to Hogan? I mean, Bischoff seems to be getting a free pass from when I would argue that he was the bigger creative consultant in terms of the actual show. First of all, I don't think losing the six-sided ring, seriously, that was a bad thing. No, it wasn't. The guys you mentioned that left ever drawn a single fucking buy rate between them? And I would argue, trying to turn TNA into a legitimate company, that the additions of
on their own, Jeff Hardy and Ric Flair, meant much more as a positive than those fuckers who left. Matt Morgan, seriously?
No objection there, Your Honour.
And there were things that it was generally agreed that TNA needed to do, like leaving the Impact Zone. And it's been said repeatedly across the way that that is something Hogan was a voice for, which is something for years Eric Bischoff and Hulk Hogan have pushed to get out of Orlando, which is a Meltzer quote, because this podcast loves Meltzer quotes. In fact, Liam's filleting him beneath the desk right now. You've been quiet, Dave.
You know.
Now, obviously, you know, leaving the Impact Zone in the long run wasn't a success for them, but in prediction, I mean, Meltzer said, obviously, this is good for the product. TNA has done a number of tapings outside of Orlando, both in its test run and so on and so forth. Basically saying, everyone at the time was saying, yeah, we agree with Hogan. They've got to get out of the Impact Zone. Did it work out? No, but I think that is, as we've said, more down to, they're fucking TNA. Taking this as theoretically one third of the prosecution's argument, I just feel like, I think this, we're talking about TNA more than TNA deserve. Hogan, no Hogan. Exasperation, thy name is TNA.
It was, and I mean, you know, even the much vaunted Monday Night Non-War, what this period in TNA's illustrious history represents was their biggest gamble as a company to try and legitimise themselves. But at the end of the day, it's fucking TNA, and they have a well-documented track record of not being able to do a fucking thing right. You talk about the killing of their identity. What fucking identity? It was always been shit. It's been a laughing stock since its inception. Maybe the money spent. Again, Hogan didn't spend the money. Dixie Carter, the tremendous, tremendous business lady that she is, decided to increase her own financial input, or daddy's financial input, mm-hmm. this time, as a roll of the dice. They weren't a credible number two. 1.5 for the first show showed the interest that Hogan could possibly have brought to this product. It shows the upside of the Hogan experiment. The inevitable decline is because it's TNA who can't run a fucking piss up in a brewery. Positives of Hogan, if there was any possibility, it was the faint false hope even his star power could lend some credibility to this product. I mean, that in of itself shows that the Hogan name and brand is a positive to wrestling, that it can draw this interest. The fact that it declined since then was due to inherent problems with the philosophy and the running of the company at the time. So,
if I may interject here briefly, I like to take my own different stance on TNA, because to me, the existence of TNA illustrates the damage that Hogan did in WCW better than anything else. Because looking at this in isolation, TNA, first of all, they never recovered from the Monday Night War experiment anyway, which stank of Hogan from the very beginning. I think we can all agree the product changed drastically. I don't think it ever could have been a new WCW, and therein lies my issue with irreparable damage. You cannot snap your fingers and create you cannot manufacture WCW. That built-in audience that Luke mentioned before in its dire days, a 2.5, is fucking substantially higher than TNA's best effort on that first night in. But to me, that's the irreparable harm, because Hogan, by having such an important role in the demise of WCW and the lowering of the ratings that we've documented previously, by being the top star and hurting the star power of others, and ultimately leading to the demise of WCW, TNA, through so many situations that I find unfathomable, somehow got on cable, somehow got a deal with Spike TV, somehow got so much financial backing that they could pay out the arse for these people, somehow managed to get a show on Monday night opposite the WWE. But no matter what they did, including bringing Jeff Hardy in, who was the biggest star in the business in 2009, higher merchandise sales and ratings than John Cena, he didn't make a fucking difference. He got 1.5. And to me, this illustrates the damage, the long-term irreparable harm he did, because even though TNA tried, they couldn't come close to doing anything near what WCW ever did. And to me, that's the irreparable damage. They bet the farm on Hogan, and Hogan did what Hogan does. You can blame that on Hogan all you like. I'm not as strong, I don't think G is either, on saying that Hulk Hogan was as pivotal in TNA as he was in WCW. TNA is a fucking mess and everybody knows it. But the fact is, through pure luck, TNA got to this spot to maybe do something. One company in 14 years, and now it's and it was just pissed away that quick. I mean, if you want to blame Hulk Hogan's creative direction, the fact that the show was built around Hulk Hogan, and the fact that he did have a key role, as mentioned in the Dixie Carter quote,
built it all around himself, and it hit rock bottom so fast to the point now where they can't have to run their fucking shows in Dixie Carter's garage. They don't have a pot to piss in or a window to throw it out of. The company is in worse shape now than it was before Hogan got there. They don't even fucking run pay-per-views. They don't run shows anymore. I don't see how the TV deal is viewed by fucking four burglars and a drunk woman who are just watching it abstractly. There is no upside to Hulk Hogan in TNA. He did do damage to the company. Financially, creatively, whatever you want to say. But to me, TNA is symbolic of the long-term damage Hogan did. And no other company's even come close to TNA, and that's a fucking depressing reality. And the difference between that level and what WCW was cannot be cultivated. It cannot just be something that you snap your fingers and build up overnight. And that was eradicated in large part due to Hulk Hogan's decisions from the power he had.
Now, let's go back to the witness statements, ladies and gentlemen, and on Hogan's role in TNA. CS from Pro Wrestling Only. Hulk didn't help much, but TNA management was inept before him and after him. Can't see how Hulk reasonably takes the blame for incompetence that both predates and postdates his involvement. Simple fan from TPWW forums. Hogan pissed me off when TNA brought him in, but TNA was fine and Hogan had to come in and WWE it up and try to compete with Raw when they just weren't that. Rockstar Dud from WrestlingForum.com. With regards to TNA, while Hogan was in charge, I'd blame Dixie. Hogan was always talent. He never had the book, nor was he ever in a management position in WCW or WWF, and she gave him way too much power. Damien Ray from TPWW forums. TNA not being ready is not Hogan's fault, it's TNA's fault for offering him the money and bringing him in with a ridiculous amount of pull and influence. TNA is still going down the shitter without him, and if nothing else, it's TNA's fault they didn't capitalise on a bit of buzz that Hogan did generate. Degeneration MC from thewrestlingforum.com. When it comes to WCW and TNA's respective declines, both companies had bullshit going on beforehand, plus they let Hogan and the company do whatever the fuck they wanted. Both companies' disarray were only accelerated with Hogan's antics. Hogan was an employee, and those companies made the mistakes of confusing him with God. WCW would seemingly always be second place to Vince, no matter what they did. TNA's decline started just when they peaked in 2006 and has been making mistake after mistake ever since.
I have to object to that slightly, the idea that WCW was always going to be behind Vince. They weren't always behind Vince.
Wyatt Sheepmask from the UK fan forums. TNA are the ones that fought for signing Hogan. If you were north of 50 and some pillock rings you up offering you thousands of dollars per time just to show up and do your tired old shtick from decades earlier to the benefit of nobody, then who has really done the damage? Hogan simply saw an easy payday, and anybody who says they wouldn't have done the same if they were in his position is bullshitting.
That's alright then.
Sincerely, Mr. Stamp of Amarillo, Texas. Smelly Meatballs back from TPWW forums. While he did leave TNA in a worse shape than the pre-Hogan era, that's more of TNA's fault than his for giving him a blank check on power. Him promoting WWE more than TNA in the media should have been a big red flag.
Shit!
Of him only caring about the money. And he'd rather be back in the WWF than do any real good for TNA. Not wanting to put TNA over on his way out was just the typical only caring for himself situation.
Dixie got a hang on to his leg. That was great. Cheers, Hulk!
Chest Rockwell from the UK Fan Forum. Lacking these incidents, would wrestling be bigger today? I highly doubt it, and that comes down to Ian Drew Dice Clay's earlier point. It's a business so precariously shielding its true nature from the general public at all times, it's impossible to imagine that the facade wouldn't have come crashing down in other ways through other incidents. The TNA point is the best chance of proving the case, and even then it's so easy to point to a litany of terrible, un-Hulk-related decisions. Derek R. Hubbard from the F4W board. One could craft a strong argument that Hogan's role in TNA damaged the company to the extent that they've never been able to regain footing or momentum. So I would not disagree with the claim that he did damage to TNA, that it is yet to be repaired and may never be. Ian Drew Dice Clay from the UK fan forums. The fact he was hired should tell you all you need to know about TNA. He just jumped onto a cash cow. TNA was going to go how it was going to go with Dixie Carter in charge. Whether it was Hogan or Jarrett or Billy Corgan or Vince Russo or Eric Bischoff, her track record for hiring people who don't have the company's best interests at heart is legendary. TNA lost their chance to make a first impression years before Hogan arrived. And finally, Jerry Von Kramer, in a statement that could only be described as supporting the defence, TNA, LOL. Now, would the prosecution like to raise any points to any of those witness statements?
No, I think they spoke for themselves, and I think they touched on points that we've touched on and elaborated in some cases and supported both sides, so...
Defence are happy with that as well? In which case, I will now ask for your closing statements.
Thank you, Your Honour. Hulk Hogan, over the course of his career, demonstrated selfish behaviour with no regard for the business, acting only in his best interests on multiple occasions. Whether that is right or wrong is not our cross to bear, but we have shown that by doing so, he has, on multiple occasions, garrotted the wrestling business completely by acting for himself and creating a domino effect that has had both short-term and long-term ramifications, and in the case of WCW, permanent and irreparable ones. The wrestling business is so much less interesting without legitimate competition. Hulk Hogan played a major role in eliminating that for good. For all the good that Hulk Hogan has done through the course of his career, he has done as much bad, in my opinion. He rose it to prominence in the 80s, he helped rise it to prominence, although the wrestling business was already doing very, very well, it just helped the WWF become a monolith. The point with WCW, the disorganisation, the chaos, the not knowing who the boss is, all existed. We talk about predated and postdated with TNA, it predated and postdated the success that WCW had. The success they had was based on the ability for the stars to draw, and no one did more damage to devalue the stars than Hulk Hogan did. No one did more damage to the buy rates in the year when they went from 55 million in the black to 15 million in the red. The fact that they became a money-losing company made it very easy for a Jamie Kellner to come along and cut it, and made it even easier for any other potential buyers to say, no thank you. That's the damage that was done to WCW. That's the damage that was done to the wrestling business. TNA just goes to illustrate everything that WCW used to be by showing what it's not. It's been 14 years since the death of WCW. We're not saying that Hulk Hogan is 100% responsible for that death, but we are saying that he had legitimate power. With great power comes great responsibility, and he should be held greatly responsible.
Thank you very much. And now on to the defense for their closing remarks.
In defence of the charge, we will quickly review the 3 points in question. The Arsenio Hall case study, Hogan, in his situation, it was a no-win situation for him. Therefore, damage caused was indictment of the industry rather than Hogan, who simply in his position was the focal point of it. His actions could have been different, but I would argue quite vehemently that no matter what he said in that interview, but more specifically, it wasn't irreparable damage because the business bounced back stronger than ever. TNA, as we've already mentioned, is a clusterfuck of a wrestling company that the decision to throw money at Hogan and Bischoff, who mustn't take a back seat in this, from our point of view, played a major role in the production and overseeing of the TV direction at the time. It's a company that is incapable of running itself on a successful basis for a sustained period of time. Mediocre successes previously were outliers and not the standard. It wasn't a company that was growing, it was the last big roll of the dice. And in terms of WCW, although we are reticent to mention and bring up Hogan's strengths and what he brought to the company, as we've been throughout this court case, in the context of WCW, I do feel it should be kept in mind because the money losses speak volumes of management issues, frivolous spending, and a lack of overall structure rather than the on-screen impact of Hulk Hogan. With all these factors in mind, we believe the charge of Hulk Hogan causing irreparable damage to the wrestling industry are unfounded. And there is only, surely, one outcome, and that is not guilty. Thank you.
I'd like to thank both sides for their final statements there. With that in mind, I would just like to take a brief recess. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I must admit, when I retired to my chamber to deliberate over this, there was much agonising, much to-ing and throwing. I think it's a testament to both sides that I really did struggle with the decision on this one. But in the interest of suspense, we're going to pick it apart just a little bit. Just a little bit. In terms of the WWF argument that the prosecution put forward, it is without question an incredibly selfish act that Hogan partook in an act of self-preservation, which did cause incredible damage to the company. Outside of the sex scandals and all the things of that nature, the steroid side alone, with the negative publicity from Inside Edition 2020, things of that nature, was incredibly bad for the company. And despite what the defence referenced in terms of certain aspects leading to sort of the betterment of other individuals and possibly a better product overall, I can't really justify that as a defence of Hogan, in the sense of, to use an analogy, it would be like me pardoning a drunk driver who just happened to kill someone who was on his way to shoot someone, for example. It's a twisted analogy, but I think you get, I feel you get the point. And we can go into the Donahue performance for Vince and all that that entailed. It was an incredibly large black eye for the company, and everything did snowball. But going to the point of irreparable damage, as the defence have demonstrated, and as we know, the company did rebound from those issues. Whilst you can give no credit to Hogan for the fact that WWF rebounded, the fact is they did, and in the cold light of day, it would be difficult for me to then state that it was irreparable damage. Bypassing WCW and moving on to TNA just briefly, is Hogan an egomaniac? Absolutely. Did he bring some heinous individuals on board that took up TV time, such as Bubba the Love Sponge, the Return of the Nasties, things of that nature? Yes, he did. They were terrible, terrible acts. But in terms of the damage to TNA, I think the defence made several good points about the way in which that company was managed prior to Hogan, and in fact the way they projected themselves on TV prior to Hogan. Yes, he's heavy-handed in things such as changing the ring, moving outside of Orlando, arguably about pushing them onto the Monday night, but I don't think that's enough to make a case. The ring, to me, is really side-dressing. It's in the grand scheme of things, a non-issue. Moving out of the impact zone is something they'd aspired to before Hogan, and the push to Monday nights is something the company talked about prior to Hogan as well. There was a negative in terms of pay-per-view buys, which you referenced, Liam, as an average. Things such as the main event Mafia that was already there, terrible individuals in my mind that were already there, such as Nash and Hall and Waltman, had all had involvement with the company prior to Hogan, so I can't lay the blame squarely at his door for that. So I don't really feel that the damage done to TNA, although I will not argue there was damage done, I would argue the case that TNA, outside the realms of Hogan, if you will, did just as much damage to themselves. Which brings me back to WCW, which to me really is the crux of the case. This really is what the case hinges on, in my mind. Luke made reference, and Kieran made reference to Jamie Kellner and his decision to pull the plug. And Luke made reference in terms of Jamie Kellner's character and his general worldview, let's say. However, Jamie Kellner, even with that worldview, I do not believe pulls the plug on a company that is turning a profit. If the company's turning the profit, I believe it stays. Because even though he was sort of the head up in the day-to-day operations, shareholders could have still removed him from that position. So I don't believe he would have dared to remove a company from the airwaves that was so profitable, had that been the case. In terms of Hogan's actions, there are some incredibly selfish ones. Again, Road Wild being a prime example. Bringing his friends in whilst not aesthetically pleasing, so, you know, the likes of the Honky Tonk Man, Jim Duggan, whilst people were possibly not necessarily yearning for that, or someone like the Zodiac for a main event at Starrcade, the company was still doing better even during that period. So whilst it's not pleasing on the eye, I don't feel there's cold hard facts to suggest that that did any damage. However, this creative control element is something that does really, really trouble me, because Hogan did decide to turn babyface in 99, which was a really crucial point for the company, and it did rob Goldberg of that heel faction to feud against. It did cool Goldberg's jets. There was a noticeable decline in television ratings and pay-per-view buy rates over a quite short span of time. All that in mind, and as much as I've agonized over it, I must find in favour of the defence.
Oh, no!
Oh, I need that then.
And I will clarify why. Whilst the creative control element does trouble me, and there were selfish acts, there are still elements to it. Arguments that were made, such as pulling Brett and Rick from TV, terrible incidents, but the creative control element does solely relate to Hogan's own character and not other individuals. And the fact that he was allowed to manipulate that to affect other individuals, I really have to put the blame elsewhere on management. It was an incredibly tough decision. On another day, I may have gone the other way. That's how much I agonised over it. But there was too much conjecture with me, and too much, I felt, projecting to say that it's all down to this creative control. It's down to Hogan. And I couldn't quite make the link explicitly, I'll say. Whilst in my own mind, I think it's probably the case, I couldn't explicitly find the link between money losses and pointing it all at Hogan, or majority at Hogan, because I think there was so much wasteful spending in that company. Taking Hogan out of the equation, I still feel there would have been losses going into the end of 99, 2000 and 2001. So with all that being said, I find Mr. Hulk Hogan, Terry Bollea, the Orange Goblin, not guilty.
Say it again! Well, fucking hell.
And man, that was tough. And I do not envy anyone being in the judge's chair.
So Triple H is still on his own in our wrestling Alcatraz. Unbelievable. Just again, at this point, I always love the behind the courtroom, inside the actor's studio type deal of people's true opinions on the case. But I just want to say to the people who never did see this off mic, Kieran's tactic of drawing a penis on a piece of paper with an arrow pointing to it saying you and holding it in front of G's face is that's contempt of court for me.
Judge didn't see it.
Behind the referee's back. A real Nick Patrick job if ever I've seen one.
You can't call what you can't see. And I mean, the slow count, I wanted to scream several times in truth. The slow count or fast count or average standard count when it comes to that Starrcade main event. I did sit there and think, it's Nick Patrick. He could quite easily have just fucked up. But no. Look, Hogan's a piece of shit. We all know Hogan's a piece of shit. You know, the things that we talk about, the Hogan turn and the fact that this probably should have been in the closing statement really, but the fact that Flair was very keen on this. And I just think, I think in some cases, the creative control became a convenient excuse for the likes of Bischoff to just quickly acquiesce and not think of creative ways around such incidents. But
in a way, I'm glad, because I'm not glad because I lost. But I can certainly see the argument being the other way. The result, this to me was one of the more interesting ones we've agonised over, because the wording is usually so key to the way that the topic goes. And in the case of Bischoff, where the wording was he was the most responsible, or in Kevin Nash's case that he was negligent over the course of his entire career, it really hinges on the way that the outcome is. To me, this is the most interesting one that we've done, because WCW is irreparable harm. And if you point to the elements, I honestly think that the more I was researching it, the more I was thinking about it, I convinced myself that, you know what, Hogan is at the heart of so many of the problems, because it had to be the Hogan show as long as he was there. There was no other way to do it. Yeah, this one doesn't appall me as much, that this verdict, even in defeat, it's close.
I'd absolutely agree it's close. Now, there was one phrase you said that nearly swung it, actually, when you referred to TNA, because I'd actually written it down before you said it with a question mark next to it, and that is TNA is symptomatic or an example of WCW. Yeah. It's symptomatic of the business because of WCW. It links back to that, and that was it was that argument of the lack of competition now causing the problems. And I think if you mentioned the word in there, and if it had been, you know, like I said, if it had been so clear, sort of like Hogan caused the death of WCW, to put as an argument, I think I would have had to dismiss it instantly, solely because it's so complex in terms of Bischoff and Nash, as we found out with previous trials. You know, it's a difficult one to argue, so I think I'd probably That's one that would have been easier to decide on, I think. But it's the fact that it is a little bit more loosely worded, shall we say, if that's fair.
Gee, want to get you in here, your thoughts on Hulk Hogan? Is this a just outcome in your opinion now that we've gotten all the bluff and bluster of the trial out of the way?
Whilst I wear my Honma-esque defeated streak with pride, which is strange, ironic that I'm absolutely useless at this concept, even though I came up with it. What the fuck is wrong with you people? What the hell? We haven't convicted anyone else other than Triple H, which was me, by the way. But we have no one. This is what's really pissing me off now, is that we still haven't found someone who's responsible for WCW. And it's just like, you know, Nash has got off, Bischoff's got off, and now fucking Hogan has got off. And in those previous two cases, Nash and Bischoff, the excuse was used that, well, they couldn't fucking do that, you know, it wasn't their fault anyway, because they had to work around Hogan. And then we eventually get around Hogan, and he's get let off as well. It's like, almost too easy to give it to Vince Russo. Because it's just like, well, you know, the company was already in the shit before Vince Russo came along. You know, he just faffed on the shit.
Dude, it's just, spoilers! We've not shown them!
But it's just that thing of, like, no one's still been held accountable for WCW, and it's really annoying. It's like no one else has been convicted. For any whichever combination of us has worked as prosecution, if we worked for the district attorney, we'd be fucking fired by now! We're fucking useless!
But doesn't that just speak volumes to the muddled mess that WCW was in terms of a structure that we can't pinpoint it down, and things aren't necessarily always that black and white, are they? As finding one person, I think.
Even as we said before, the charges aren't always necessarily trying to pin the blame on one person. It's like they are responsible for this. The charge is usually loosely based around that to prove a different point. So that's why we've had so many not guilties, but still.
Also, I just want to point out, though, Carl, that you also missed out on an opportunity to give Hogan the exact same punishment treatment as Triple H, which, in case for those of you that forgot, was to be repeatedly sodomized by Armored Johnson, which I think would have been funnily poetic considering Hogan's stance on black people.
Kieran, as a victor here, you and Luke again as the defense have reigned supreme. Your thoughts on Hulk Hogan as causing irreparable damage, in your true opinion?
Yeah, I feel a little dirty. it is really, really a tough one, because I think what makes Hogan so interesting is there is so much you can undeniably point the finger at him for. But again, I think the crux of this came down to WCW at the end of the day. There's so many things which, business and creative perspective, I think once the case was made, that it was the money losses. I think that is hard to finger it solely at one guy. I think that kind of distorted the case and took it in a different direction, maybe kind of glossed over or distorted the Hogan faux pas and digressions over the years. And although we didn't like go down the direction of the pros versus cons, because it's something we consciously didn't want to do, kind of alluded to at times, I think that does play a factor we've got to bear in mind, because the fall from WCW was so great in the context of the heights it got to because of Hogan. So it is a real, real tough one. It's, you know, I mean, the question's asked, what happens to that company if he never goes there? Does WCW survive to this day as a healthier than TNA version of TNA?
Does the business ever recover if
exactly
and Hogan doesn't get to WCW?
One of the things we've always said is the heights caused by the Monday Night War, in my opinion, led to an inevitable death of one of the two companies, because so much was on the line, and once that momentum started going down a hill for one side or the other from a peak, it was going to be hard to recover.
We talked about the times that Vince had to take out loans. Yeah. If he hadn't taken out those loans, he would have lost the war.
Yeah, it was a tough one. It was. I thought you had us, to be honest, with the WCW stuff.
Not to be.
It was, I guess it was the throwaway lines about those money losses probably swung it in our favour, when I think you're probably on the verge of winning at that point.
Fuck. Luke, your true thoughts, please.
Well, obviously, I can only really echo a lot of what Kieran just said. I mean, we walked out to talk to each other before the case started, and we said, look, the only point they've got is WCW. Because really, as far as irreparable damage in the entirety history of wrestling, the collapse of WCW is the only thing that, as far as we're seeing it from our point, has been irreparable. Everything else is inevitable. The falling of kayfabe, all these things. These are things that were going to happen. But that the fall of the only other company that could match the WWE, the only kind of real competition, it's irreparable. I cannot conceive of any way of a second company rising now in the US or in the Western world. There is no going back. It's irreparable. Then it's just a case of us going, right, we have to distance Hogan from it to an extent, which is tricky. Because he's intimately part of it. There's so many little things. Hulk Hogan is this strange dichotomy where he is just one man, and yet for so long he was the business. He absolutely, to millions and millions of people around the world, Hulk Hogan was wrestling, you know? But still, in reality, he was one man. He could only do so much. That was really tricky, and as Kieran said, I thought we'd lost it there towards the end. Because basically, I couldn't figure out why you'd chosen TNA as one of your topic points until I realized that all you were doing was using it to reinforce your WCW point, which was your main point, which was what you had, because it's the thing. I don't know where I would have gone as a judge in that case, honestly. But maybe we'll never know who was to blame. Maybe this will be one of the great unsolved crimes.
If only there was a book about this.
Yeah, that'd be interesting.
Well, on that note, I want to thank everybody for the contributions. If we didn't get to it this time, I apologise. MattGo10 from WrestlingForum.com asked for a mistrial because he objected to the charge. We got a not guilty verdict instead, but we will be back next week. So join us again for G. John Chase.
Hogan's still a racist.
For Luke Edwards.
Yep.
For Kieran O'Rourke.
Aren't we all a little bit, though?
And for Cole Jones.
Speak for yourself, immigrant.
I am Liam O'Rourke, and we are out of here. With free dental care and a stock plan that helps you invest. But beware of his generous pensions, plus 3 weeks paid vacation each year. And on Fridays, the lunchroom serves hot dogs and burgers and beer. He loves German beer. He'll sting you with his dreams of power and wealth. Beware of Scorpio. His twisted twin obsessions are his plot to rule the world and his employees' health. He'll welcome you into his lair like the nobleman welcomes his guest. With free dental care and a stock plan that helps you invest. But beware of his generous pensions, plus 3 weeks paid vacation each year. And on Fridays, the lunchroom serves hot dogs and burgers and beer. He loves German beer.